Yankees Files podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of the team that's still in first place in the American League East. And those are, of course, the New York Yankees, who just finished off a winning week with a series split against the surprisingly frisky Oakland A's, and then a series win on the road against Jake Bowers, Gary Sanchez, and the Milwaukee Brewers, which featured a ton of world-famous home runs from the New York Yankees, which we love to see. So Whipple, there's a lot for us to get into, but first, how are you doing?
I mean, winning two games in a weekend and scoring 30 runs after having probably one of the more annoying losses on Friday, and I'd say throughout the week, I mean, definitely the feeling on Friday night was, you know, the offense just isn't there. It isn't clicking. A lot of guys are kind of holes in the lineup right now. People are going to get on track.
We don't know when. They did score six runs that night, in fairness.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that was more the feeling after Thursday. But yeah, regardless, Friday was tough. I mean, six runs was there, but there, you know, there's big gaps in the middle of the lineup. How quickly things change, because less than 48 hours later, I think we've seen probably one of the more impressive two-game showings for the Yankees. I want to say in at least a year and a half. I mean, it's been at least since 2022 that they've scored this many runs in back-to-back games. And it's just, I mean, what a fun way to end the weekend. If the Yankees had lost today, I was so convinced they were going to lose, because I just felt like one of those weekends where it's like you lose the close game Friday, you win the blowout Saturday, you lose the close game Sunday, and you have the better run differential while losing the squeakers. But man, I'm just so glad to be able to get on the pod and talk about all sorts of fun things about the offense that really I didn't think we would be able to talk about on Friday. And this season has been great so far, but it definitely, there's been the ups and downs, and definitely has made, I think, us realize that baseball, while people say, you know, 162 games, it's, you know, it's boring, you need a long attention span, I would argue that the ups and downs of baseball basically give you short-term dopamine hits every time your team wins. And all you have to do if your team loses is make it to the next day, and you're going to get a chance to see them win again. It really is a sport designed for people with short attention spans. So just, and you know, when it's going well and you keep getting those dopamine hits, you keep seeing world famous home runs, there's really nothing like it. And that's the feeling I have right now.
So at the end of play on Thursday, when the Yankees ended up splitting the series with the A's, they ranked ninth in WRC plus at 109, and they ranked tied for 11th in home runs with 27. They then played this series with the Milwaukee Brewers, who are very good. They're 18-10. And they now rank fourth in WRC plus at 121 and tied for second in home runs at 37. The world famous home run is the perfect mechanism for generating offense and for having a good offense. And the Yankees hit 10 of them in this series. Their WRC plus as a team went up by 12 points. Some guys started to look really good, namely Anthony Rizzo. Gleyber Torres had back-to-back multi-hit games that both included extra base hits. It just felt like stuff started to go right, and how could we ignore Aaron Judge? Now, I do think the rumors of Aaron Judge's demise were greatly exaggerated, and we can get into that, but yeah, I'm with you. Especially when they blew the 4-0 lead today, I really thought, you know, they're going to find a way to lose this game 6-5. It just feels like that's how they're going to go. And yeah, to your point, they'll have outscored the Brewers by 10 runs and lost 2 out of 3 games. And that didn't happen. They put up 15 runs in back-to-back games and won the series emphatically. And, you know, the Yankees, whose run differential and performance relative to it concerned us just last week, now have the tied for the third best run differential in baseball, just 4 runs behind the Braves, who are at the top in that stat. And they are one of just 3 teams with at least 19 wins. They're 3rd in winning percentage. Like the peripherals, the underlying stats are starting to line up with the performance. it's starting to line up with a record. There's a ton to be excited about here. And you're talking about short-term dopamine hits, and baseball certainly does provide those. But I felt like between yesterday and today, that was just one long dopamine IV, like just stuck right in my arm.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, I think the Yankees have never really been out of a game this year, but that the downside of that is you never really feel like you have secure victories. You don't, they haven't had any laughers this year. And run differential in baseball is super important. Like, it is really predictive of how a team is, even though, you know, everyone points to the teams that win so many games 4-3 and 5-4. You know, those teams are clutch and they're gonna, you know, they have the will to win. As Hawk Harrelson once said, like, those are the teams that get exposed. And so I think it's really important to, like, always look at run differential. And when that gets boosted, you know, like, that's not nothing. The Yankees winning back-to-back 10-run games is not two fluky days for the offense. It's like you said, stuff is starting to line up. It's really hard to win games of baseball, but it's also much harder to win them by that much. And anytime you can do that once, it's super impressive. Back-to-back games, yeah, a dopamine IV. I think it's a great way to say it. I'm glad that we had that this year, and I think the timing was super unexpected because, you know, just 2 days ago, people were upset online at pitching decisions and looking at, you know, players they have X number of hits and X number of at-bats. And you know what I hate is when people say this player, I mostly think of Anthony Volpe, because I've seen a lot of, like, since the four hit game in Arizona, Volpe is hitting this. And you know what, like, that's the worst kind of sample size carving up, because you could also look in shorter sample sizes. You could look in medium term. You could spin those numbers any way you want. So, like, everybody has something to justify their argument. The Yankees have been okay at scoring runs this year, but like you said, a lot was kind of like ready to break out. And I think this weekend was, for me, it was like, okay, now these numbers are starting to reflect what they can do, and the wins they have on the board are banked, but the foundation has been there and it's going to continue to be there. Like, these are the guys who are going to be able to put up those numbers. I don't want to see Aaron Judge has, you know, X amount of, like, hits and doesn't have a home run in this, because it changes so quickly. Like, this weekend, nobody's going to be using those stats. And that's good.
Because Aaron Judge has a 126 WRC plus right now. His WRC plus, if you exclude the first, like, five games of the season, is over 150. But yeah, between going into yesterday's game, Aaron Judge had a 98 WRC plus. It went up by 28 points just with a good weekend.
Yeah. And I mean, Rizzo, I'm sure you have the numbers on Rizzo, but he basically saved the season in a weekend. Like, it's still early.
Yep. Rizzo's went from 89 to 132 in 2 days.
I think it's just a really exciting weekend, and it couldn't have been better time given what the Yankees are going to have to face this week. And, you know, I hate to say games are important because it's still early, but with the new schedule and the way that the Yankees and the Orioles are establishing themselves right now, as classes of, I think, the American League, like, the head-to-head games are going to have a little extra importance. And the Yankees are now really firing on all cylinders in their offense. I think it's going to be a great week, and the confidence and the vibes are high. But at the end of the day, like, I feel like this group of players is so talented. Like we've been saying, you just knew the breakout was going to happen, and maybe not this emphatically, but if it was going to happen, I'm glad it happened this emphatically, because I think a lot of people will be a little more quiet online tonight.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was very openly concerned about the quality of contact by the Yankees and the state of the offense, particularly after losing games 2-0 and 3-1 to the A's. But as I was saying before we got on, the A's are, like, really good at limiting hard contact. And that was something that I noticed when we were looking at pitching leaderboards on the same iteration of this podcast. But, like, their pitchers are first in barrel rate allowed, like, it's the lowest, whether you look at a percentage of batted balls or a percentage of plate appearances. They're second in hard hit rate allowed. They are not quite as good in the gross exit velocity stats, but still fifth in EV50 allowed and third in average exit velocity allowed. Like, they're phenomenal at limiting hard contact. And I think we saw that a good amount in the Yankees series. And, you know, I do not feel, I may have overreacted to the offense given the notions I had about it and then seeing that series. And I probably didn't give enough credit to the quality of the A's pitching, particularly to the quality of their bullpen. And then the Yankees came out against a Brewers team that, as I mentioned, had been quite good and has been quite good this year. I mean, I saw the Brewers trounce the Orioles just a couple weeks ago, and the Yankees put up, what, 36 runs in the series? When you're averaging 12 runs per game, some pretty good stuff is going to happen, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point, Friday was disappointing, but six runs is still six runs. I mean,
and Trent Grisham like went yard, which I do love.
That was a great home run, just for the narratives.
Can we talk about that home run? He hardly swung.
Yeah.
It was like a left-handed Stanton swing. It ended like at his front hip. I don't know how he did that. And for that ball to go 404 feet or whatever it was, like, holy cow.
Ball was carrying this weekend. I mean, the Brewers had their fair share of home runs too. It was
Jake
honestly
Bowers hit a world famous home run, which was great for my narratives. Gary Sanchez is now a 110 WRC plus hitter on the season. Like, almost everything that you would want to see go well if you're me, like to say I had a great weekend, went well, like with the exception of a loss in extra innings. But even like my attitude towards extra innings, particularly on the road, is like, it's not real. So the Yankees have what, two road extra inning losses this year? They have the one in Cleveland and this one. Like, those are fake to me.
I mean, Michael Tonkin is 2024's version of Brooks Grisky. Like
Michael Gulf of Tonkin.
The feeling of, I mean, having been at the Brooks Grisky game, I can say the feeling of having a lead in extra innings and knowing you're going to lose the game based on who's on the mound, it was the same feeling. So
yeah.
Like I said a few weeks ago, like extra innings on the road is really hard to win, which is why I had an issue with how they treated it. But like this week, it was kind of like, given what was going on in the bullpen and how the game had unfolded, and now in context, like how the rest of the weekend's unfolded, like I just don't think it's worth being that upset about. Michael Tonkin's like appearance of being like a Napoleon Dynamite extra is honestly funnier to me than like his blowing the game.
Michael Tonkin's wild, dude. Yeah. And he pitched today in a victory for the New York Yankees. So good for him. Yeah. We got a slew of position players pitching this weekend, which I personally loved. Jose Trevino pitched in a win. He was the first Yankees primary position player to pitch in a win since 1968, which was pretty cool. I was really frustrated because at the end of the game, I was doing that stat head search. And as I was composing the tweet, Michael K started reading out exactly that stat. So that was kind of annoying because I felt like I was first to it. And I just couldn't get it out fast enough. But one thing that's funny about that search is I included all of team history in it. And if you go back far enough, Babe Ruth starts appearing. And it's like, I get that he was a primary position player for the Yankees, but it doesn't feel like we're talking about the same kind of thing when we start putting Babe Ruth in this search. Because as you know, imagine Roy Halladay today becoming Barry Bonds.
Hey. I mean, you joke, but yesterday was Babe Ruth Day. So that's maybe true. That was Jose Trevino's homage, or maybe the Yankees just scoring a lot of runs and hitting home runs was their homage to the Babe. I didn't even know that.
We saw true homage to Babe Ruth today when Jake Bowers hit a home run and threw a scoreless inning.
That's true. But, you know, as Babe Ruth lovers, I was yesterday years old when I learned it was Babe Ruth Day on the 27th. So,
yeah, I had no idea either. The first I heard of Babe Ruth Day was you telling me it was Babe Ruth Day.
The reason I learned of it was like this ice cream place in Boston that I went to like two times and I followed on Instagram said it was like, oh, it's Babe Ruth.
Was it that place in Davis Square?
No, no.
What's that place called?
JP Licks. But that's JP also very Licks. Good.
That's a good spot. Boston Ice Cream. JP Licks in Davis Square.
Boston JP Licks is really files. Good. Boston Ice Cream spots apparently no ball because Babe Ruth. What a guy.
Do you know about the time he was riding on a train?
He was a tall man.
Tall man. This has gone too far. So, Whipple, I want to talk to you about Anthony Volpe. Anthony Volpe has a 134 WRC plus this year. It's his 23rd birthday today as we're recording this, and he hit a home run today, his third of the season, which was awesome. And I love that for him. Coming into today, his ex-WOBA was lower than it was last year, which I think is largely a consequence of his ground ball to fly ball ratio going from 1.11 to 1.9. And look, all of that, I can't look past all of that, but I can look past it to the extent that, like, he's banking good results and we should enjoy his WOBA overperformance while we have it. Here's the question I want to pose about Anthony Volpe, and my baseball page, who's a phenomenal follow on Twitter, has raised this a few times. I think we need to challenge the paradigm of what a leadoff hitter is, given how we now think about second hitters. And if we think Anthony Volpe's speed and general base running ability matters, and we want to put him in positions to use his speed, like, how often are you going to have him attempt a stolen base during a Judge or Soto plate appearance?
Yeah, and so they said that on the broadcast last night, too.
Exactly. So as much as it's nice that Anthony Volpe is hitting at a level at which you can tolerate him getting the most plate appearances on the team, are we maximizing Anthony Volpe by batting him first, or are we limiting his skill set by putting him in that position?
I think it's tough because I agree that it's a concern, and I hadn't really thought of that until, like, they said it on the broadcast last night. And yeah, like, when are you, either as the Yankees or Anthony Volpe himself, going to be maybe okay with, comfortable, feel like you want to push the envelope with Soto or Judge hitting? And I feel like it's tough, and I hadn't really considered that. I think if Anthony Volpe is hitting like Anthony Volpe is hitting, he's going to be a force no matter where he hits. But if Anthony Volpe is running like Anthony Volpe can run, yeah, I think that does limit him. And to me, like, it's the trade-off of, it depends on how you feel about DJ LeMahieu, because I think Gleyber Torres is not going back to leadoff. So
Gleyber Torres is heating up recently.
I just don't think the Yankees, I don't think he does well in leadoff. I don't think the Yankees want him in leadoff.
I don't think the Yankees want him at leadoff either. I agree.
I think it's Volpe or DJ. And do you trust DJ's contact ability? I hate to say that, but like
think DJ LeMahieu is going to be a good hitter or not?
Yeah. Like does Volpe's hitting outweigh DJ's hitting enough to offset Volpe's speed? I personally still think it kind of does. I don't know. I have next to no confidence in DJ LeMahieu right now. I feel like I would rather have that extra bat at the top of the lineup, have the ability to run, not just maybe not stolen bases as much, but just the speed. I don't know. Like, that, maybe I'm just underrating DJ LeMahieu enough, but like, I just don't like where this is going with him. And if those are my options, I still feel like I kind of will take Volpe. I could be wrong.
So I have a really important update to give before I respond to this point, which is the Tampa Bay Rays, the big bad Tampa Bay Rays, were just swept at the hand of Chicago White Sox, who are famously the very worst team in Major League Baseball.
Is that Andrew Benintendi's Chicago White Sox?
Andrew Benintendi, $85 million boy, Andrew Benintendi and his Chicago White Sox. 48 WRC plus, Andrew Benintendi and his Chicago White Sox just swept the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays, didn't the Rays win, what, 100 games last year? 99. What's going on? The White Sox have 6 wins. Half of them came in this series against the Rays.
You have been more preying on the Rays' downfall than I have.
I have to admit,
like, the Rays, as we know them, usually have, like, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 star level players. I just feel like there's a limit to what the Rays can withstand, and they might have reached that limit. And, like, Jeff Nelson said, like, you know, like, I don't agree, like, they're a super sloppy team, but, like, I think they're a team that plays on the margins. And, you know, when you, it only goes so far, and I'm excited to see that luck actually running out. I feel like they are the ones most likely to meet based on the first month to just completely fall off the division race.
And I would enjoy that quite a lot. Anyway,
not as much as the Blue Jays losing a lot, because, like, when we're talking about division rivals, I feel like for whatever reason, I mean, there's not a lot of Rays fans on Twitter, but, like, a lot of Blue Jays fans always pop up in my feed, and oh man, am I enjoying them meltdown over lots of things, but, like, IKF actually being one of their better hitters is so funny to me.
the entire IKF situation, you texted me yesterday, like, I'm so glad we're done with this, and I agree. 92 WRC plus IKF. Anyway, to your point about Anthony Volpe and DJ LeMahieu, your point is well taken, and I agree with you that there's probably nobody the Yankees want to use in that spot except for Anthony Volpe and DJ LeMahieu. And that does complicate things. But I have a proposal. And do I feel good about it? Given
Are you gonna a lot say of what things, I think you're gonna say?
No, I don't feel good about it. But I am going to say what you think I'm going to say, which is, especially if Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton are above average Major League Baseball players, which they've been both of them so far this year. Now that Alex Verdugo walks over 12% of the time, why shouldn't he be the leadoff hitter?
Yeah.
Like, Alex Verdugo has a 358 WRC plus after, or sorry, he does not have a 358 WRC plus. He has a 358 on base percentage after a 2-year sample over which it was 326. He's not doing it with crazy BABIP luck. He started pulling the ball in the air. Like, the whole story of Alex Verdugo being a productive offensive player this year, by the way, is Alex Verdugo doing exactly the stuff we kept saying he should do and just doubted he would do, which is hitting the ball hard in the air to the pull side. So I want to get that out of the way first. But now that he's getting on base so much, now that he has turned his very, very good eye into walks, which was one of the perplexing things about his profile before, is he almost never swung. He had really good plate discipline, but he also almost never walked. That was weird. Now that he's a productive offensive player who walks a lot and is getting on base a lot, why shouldn't he be the leadoff hitter? He's not the stolen base threat that Volpe is, so you're not neutralizing that, but he's a fine base runner. He's not clogging the base paths. He gets on base in front of Soto and Judge. You then hit Volpe probably ahead of Glaber, who we know has a ground into double play problem, and you just have Volpe steal until Glaber is hitting so well that you feel like you can't take the bat out of his hands. Like, now, this all comes with the caveat that we know that the difference between the best possible lineup a team can have and the worst possible lineup a team can have is, like, a fraction of a fraction of a run, and none of this matters all that much. But just in the interest of maximizing what the Yankees can get out of Anthony Volpe, do you see that as an option? Do you think the Yankees wouldn't even consider it? How do you feel about that element of the Volpe LeMahieu equation?
Yeah, I feel like, well, I would have said 0%, but then they batted him cleanup, which I didn't think was going to happen. And so clearly, like, there's, you know, he's rising a little I think more than a little bit, but he's, I think his estimation is rising, which to me says like anything is possible. I just feel like the Yankees love Anthony Volpe so much and love DJ LeMahieu so much that like, I just don't feel like they would think that both of them are not qualified for the spot. I mean, honestly, after watching this team for a month, I think Juan Soto should hit leadoff.
I agree with you. I think like, the right answer since the moment that the Yankees acquired Juan Soto is that Juan Soto should hit leadoff. But the Yankees obviously aren't interested in doing that.
I just feel like I was kind of on the fence, but then I've been watching for a month, like watching more than I've ever watched him before. And it's just like, there's really no reason. Like, if your leadoff hitter is not going to steal bases because he's hitting ahead of Juan Soto, then like, why can't Juan Soto just hit leadoff? And nobody's stealing bases, but you have Juan Soto on base already.
Who walks 18% of the time and has a .434 on base should just be your leadoff hitter, to be clear.
Just do, honestly, like Soto, Judge, Verdugo/Rizzo, Stanton, Verdugo/Rizzo. Like, I think that's great. I feel like
Glaber, catcher, Cabrera.
Yeah. Or, you know, LeMahieu, whatever. Like, I mean, that's not going to happen, but I feel like the easy answer is the right answer, but it's never going to happen. I like the Verdugo pick. I feel like even against like, you know, him against righties and like one of the others, DJ or whatever against lefties, I just don't like, for me, it's like if Volpe prevents DJ from being leadoff, like I feel like it is worth it. I just don't want him to be leadoff. I just feel like I know where this is going, where like it's going to be a month of like, you know, he's got to figure it out and then he gets dropped. For me, I also am like, is he going to be able to play third with this foot thing? Like, the Yankees need a third baseman. I feel like,
I mean, I don't know what he can do with the foot thing. and that's concerning. And it's also like, do you know how nice it would be right now if Ben Rice were a third baseman instead of a first baseman? Like, that would help, because there's not an obvious fix. And especially, you know, I think we all are enjoying what Oswaldo Cabrera has brought this year, you know, with a 109 WRC plus and some versatility, but he is not a very good defender at third base. And the expected stats do not smile on him, although he has been doing the pulled ball in the air thing more, which does benefit him when it comes to, you know, outperforming those expected stats. Also, I'm sorry to Oswaldo Cabrera. He might be more average than bad at third base because he does have one defensive run saved and negative two outs above average. So that, you know, maybe it's a little bit more split, but yeah, it seems like this team would really benefit from finding like the third base version of Luke Voit. Like a power bat that they can stick in the lineup that can also play third base. And I don't know if that guy's out there. I think the versions of that guy who are out there are kind of entrenched on teams because that's a valuable player to have. But yeah, I'm with you. They don't really have a third baseman, and that's concerning.
Here's a thought. JD Davis.
You know that I very much like the just guys who have been on the Giants recently.
I know. I'm catering. I'm pandering here.
I think he's
injured but coming back. So, like, that's my understanding. So, maybe not an immediate fix, but soon.
Yeah, he's on a rehab assignment right now. I'm a fan of JD Davis. I think he's a good player. Now, he is, you know, also not the slickest fielding third baseman in the world. Last year, outs above average liked him more than DRS. DRS really hated him, but the Yankees have had a guy like that before. His name was Giovanni Urshela. If you could get JD Davis, I think that would be a strong option. I do wonder if the Yankees would really buy into the idea that JD Davis is a big upgrade over Oswaldo Cabrera. Because right. if they think that the underlying stuff with Oswaldo Cabrera hitting fewer ground balls and kind of doing some productive stuff offensively, if they're bought into that and then they like his versatility, they probably don't think JD Davis is like a 115 WRC plus hitter. They probably don't think he's an amazing defender. So like, I don't know if he is a guy I see them giving something up for, but he is at least the third baseman, and that should count for something.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar in that vein on the Marlins. I mean, Jake Berger, another. I think it's the same concerns, though. You know, not great defense, not hitting that well. Is he better than Oswaldo? It's tough. Third base is, I mean, honestly, when the Astros are playing, the Yankees are never going to get Bregman, but he probably could be a trade candidate this summer.
Yeah, if things continue to go badly for the Astros, and I want to make something very, very clear. There are few things that are more important to me than things continuing to go poorly for the Houston Astros. They deserve this. They are a franchise of liars and cheaters, and their failure is of the utmost importance, and it is good, and it shows that there is justice in the world. But anyway, yeah, if things continue to go poorly for the Astros, then Alex Bregman moving could be a very interesting like balance of power thing in Major League Baseball, at least. But I agree. I don't see him ending up on the Yankees. Also, are you aware of how bad he's been this year?
He's been bad. I mean, other than Altuve, he's been
awful.
I feel like the whole team's been not that great.
Well, they've been scoring runs. Their offense has been pretty good, in spite of not getting anything from Bregman. But oh my gosh, is their pitching staff terrible? And I just get a real kick out of when the Astros were linked to Snell, when Snell was still unsigned, I tweeted, like, look, if the Astros want to spend all their money on Jose Altuve and Justin Verlander and Jose Abreu and Blake Snell and Josh Hader while they lose every advantage they had in player development because Mike Elias is in Baltimore, like, they can be my guest. And Yankee fans responded and they were like, you're just coping because the Astros address their needs aggressively and the Yankees try to, you know, just put scrubs in the game and bet on them. And it's like, bro, I don't know if you're keeping up with the Astros pitching staff that people in those responses insisted was so good and so talented. But with the exception of Ronel Blanco, who the ERA estimators don't even like because all he's doing is having a phenomenally low BABIP and home run per fly ball, like, that team is not very good at preventing runs. Like, you know, Brian Abreu not having a good year, Brandon Belak pitching a lot more than they'd want him to, not having a good year, Hunter Brown and JP France, who are both in the starting rotation, have ERAs of 9.68 and 7.46, respectively. And this is the team that we were told is going all out and attacking its needs and going to be so much better than the Yankees. Give me a break. Anyway, I'm very glad that they're back.
Can I read you just some random numbers? Just some completely unrelated numbers.
Please read me some random numbers. I might try to interpret them even. We'll see.
Okay, let's see. 104, 164. Oh, sorry, that's going to deceive you. Okay, I'll make this more clear. It's about a player. 0.104, 0.164, 0.119, 0.140, -16. Do you know what players?
Wait, sorry. Say it again. Say it again.
0.104, 0.164, 0.119, 0.140, -16.
That has to be, that's Jose Abreu's / line, WOBA, and WRC plus.
Yep.
And I'm going to read you a number as well, and you can tell me what you think it is. Let's see. $19.5 million.
Is that His salary?
That is Jose Abreu's salary.
All right, wait. This is really fun. So let me do one more.
Okay.
This is simpler. 8.38.
Josh Hader's ERA.
Isn't this so much fun? Like, why are we talking about the Yankees?
I have one more for you. 0.00.
Is that Clay Holmes' ERA?
That's Clayton Walter Holmes' ERA, baby. Dude, I'm so good when the team is good. This is unbelievable. Like, I don't think we've had this much fun on a podcast since like 2022.
Yeah.
Last time we had Brian Garcia on. Or whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
We had Nick Nelson on.
Oh my god. That's people
dark,
forget.
Yeah, people forget. The dark
people forget. So I think one thing that we do legitimately need to discuss about the Yankees, and I think the emerging area of concern, is they've been quite good at preventing runs this year. And that's awesome. As of right now, they have the lowest ERA for the entire staff in Major League Baseball. They're kind of middling. They're 11th by Fangraphs WAR because they're a little walk happy and a little not strikeout happy enough. And Fangraphs WAR is a FIP based WAR, and they're like 16th in FIP. But it's less about the performance in the aggregate and more to me about where the innings are coming from. Because as we saw with Luis Gil on Friday, the Yankees seem to want to, well, I don't know if I want to say the Yankees seem to want to push starters to extend their outings, but it's probably true that the Yankees are served maybe more than most teams by not handing the ball to middle relievers. I think they're still determining how the trust tree ranks between the Calebs Ferguson and the Victor's Gonzalez and the Ronz Marinaccio, who is apparently, you know, back in the fold, and you know, the Nick Birdie injury hurts, and the other injuries, Efros, Trevino, Canely, obviously hurt. But the Yankees seem aware of the fact that they're well served by not handing the ball to middle relievers. And Ian Hamilton has done some stuff I don't love recently, but he and Clay Holmes, I think we can say, are you know, quite dependable. I'm just starting to get a little bit concerned about, until those three or four big bullpen arms are back, how the Yankees cover innings. Because, you know, Marcus Stroman, Clark Schmidt, and Luis Gil really don't pitch deep into games. It was great to see that, or it has been great really all year, with the exception of his first two starts. Like Nestor's last four starts, 8 innings, 4 innings, 7 innings, 7 innings. That's been awesome. Carlos Rodon has, you know, as his effectiveness and efficiency have improved, you know, I think there's probably going to be plenty of opportunities for him to pitch deeper into games. He's coming off a 7-inning start and a 6-inning start. So those are all great, but are you kind of getting the same concern that I'm getting about, like, beyond Rodon and Cortez, how do the Yankees go about attacking the innings they're going to need to get out of, you know, some guys that we might not have a ton of faith in, you know, I mean, some of whom are named Dennis Santana?
I don't mind Dennis Santana. That's a little harsh. I actually think he's been okay.
Dennis Santana has been effective, but he strikes out like not even 2 times the number of guys he walks, and he hasn't given up a home run yet, which is partially a skill and partially luck for a guy who doesn't get a ton of ground balls.
Is Ron Marinaccio like back on people's radar? Like, is this like,
it seems like Ron Marinaccio is a guy who is going to pitch innings for the Yankees.
He was the
first
call
guy out of the bullpen today.
Wasn't he the call up? was he the call up on the doubleheader and then he just never went down? I think it's around that time.
They made two roster moves for the doubleheader because they called up Poteet as the 27th man. That was also the time that they brought up Marinaccio, but like with him being the first guy out of the bullpen today, I think it's and you know, he's been used six times. I think
Friday too.
Yeah, I think they plan to keep him around. And I'm not comfortable that Ron Marinaccio is not 2023 Ron Marinaccio still yet.
Yeah, I mean, 2023 Ron Marinaccio was also being used like this at the beginning. Like,
yeah,
for better or worse, I mean, he definitely is a known quantity, and I think the Yankees feel comfortable. Like, clearly, if I feel like there's guys, you know, they show a lot of stuff and it takes time to work into the trust circle, and guys who, like, you know, all they have to do, they have the benefit of the doubt. So I don't know how I feel about that, too. I am happy with Luke Weaver's continued emergence. I think that's a real weapon for them. I guess the question is where the innings are going to come from. I mean, I think Tommy Canley is like the most important guy other than Gerrit Cole, who they're waiting on right now, because I think this bullpen really could use a Tommy Canley.
Yeah.
Like, for me, like, that is bigger than, just given the way like this bullpen is shaping up and given like how that's affecting some games, I think Tommy Canley is like the number one immediate, you know, or near term source of innings. If Gerrit Cole makes it back in a month and a half and you have Rodon and Nestor pitching like they're pitching, I think the dynamic shifts a bit where you have
definitely
dependable starters. You can deal with the Stroman and Schmidt kind of like sometimes short outings. Clark Schmidt just seems like this is like the perpetual challenge. So, like, I guess I would have more optimism in Stroman delivering length and hoping for the Cole and Canley returns. Those are kind of like, yeah, I think if I had to pick three sources of optimism, I think Stroman can pitch deeper. And I think Canley is a shot in the arm. And I think whenever Cole's back, I mean, that just kind of flips everything on its head. Because, you know, I mean, it's the reigning Cy Young.
Wait, Gerrit Cole won the Cy Young Award last year?
No big deal. I mean, just a little Cy Young.
Just a little Cy Young.
The vibes are going to be, like, good, but, like, when Gerrit Cole is back, it's going to be, like, for me, like, there's that upper limit right now that's going to, it's like the champagne cork popping off when he's back.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting, and I'm ready for it. But, yeah, it just, I agree with you on Canley making a big impact whenever he returns. Just anything to lengthen the bullpen will make me feel good, I think. And
Wait. What? Sorry. One other thing I meant to bring up. Do we think Clayton Beter should be in the majors right now?
So that's where I was going to take this.
Okay.
I don't understand. Like, if Clayton Beter at the major league level could be something like what Luke Weaver is, I think that's a valuable piece for this team to have in this bullpen. And keeping him down because they see him as a starter when the five guys who are currently starting, Gerrit Cole and Will Warren, all exist, feels a little bit funny to me, especially because with Stroman and Schmidt both in this rotation, you could get Beter regular multi-inning outings probably if you used him as like a, you know, not an opener and a bulk guy, but if you just said the first guy out of the bullpen is going to be Clayton Beter when either Rodon or when either Schmidt or Stroman start, then like there's your workload, and you could stretch him back out into being a starter just by giving him a couple outings with an opener if he is pressed into such a responsibility. Like, I don't really get it, especially like he broke camp with the team, and I'm not convinced that every arm in the bullpen is better than Clayton Beter is, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, when I went to one of the spring training games, it was beater for four innings, heel for four innings. Why is that not just a regular pairing? I mean, in my
that
mind,
feels like it should be an option to me.
I think the Yankees are making a mistake by trying to push heel. That was like the biggest thing that I was a little bit annoyed about on Friday, because it seemed unnecessary when clearly, like, I think he was kind of done to try to send him back out for the sixth. But like you said, I think they are trying to push these guys. I just view Clark Schmidt differently than I view Luis Gil. Like, Luis Gil used in the right way as a weapon because of his live arm. Clark Schmidt is a really good pitcher. I want Clark Schmidt to go and pitch more quality innings. I want to, like, preserve Luis Gil to use it for max effectiveness. And I feel like the way to do that is not by getting him into the sixth inning. So, like, yeah, why is not a beater heel kind of combo? Maybe don't say that, but like, yeah, like you said, have him kind of, you know, you're getting your regular two or three innings or four innings when I don't know, like, Hill could be a starter, that's fine, but like, for, I think it just has to be viewed a little bit differently than, like, you know, a capital S starter. Just based
if
on
you let Luis Gil go through the lineup two times and then let Clayton Beater go through the lineup one and a half times and then give the ball to Ian Hamilton or Clay Holmes, I think you feel good about that.
Yeah.
And asking Luis Gil to throw a bunch of pitches and pitch long outings when he's hardly pitched in the last 2 years, and his effectiveness, as you said, is in the stuff and very much not in the command. Like, don't ask him to throw a bunch of pitches. And you have this guy sitting in AAA who strikes out everyone he sees. Like, I don't understand it. And I think I would feel a lot better about the way the Yankees can handle innings if Clayton Beater were there. And then if Luis Gil has a really efficient outing, okay, you know, now maybe Clayton Beater can just throw the last three innings of the game. Maybe he's available to clean up, you know, in like the Marinaccio role today that Stroman put them in. Like, he feels like he would be a really versatile weapon. And I appreciate that they want him to be a starter and that they're trying to get him the structured workload that way. It's just not obvious to me how Clayton Beater immediately helps the 2024 Yankees as a starter. And normally I think that's a fine way to treat a prospect, but like, he's 25 and a half years old and he clearly has the chops to do it. So I don't know. It feels to me like he ought to be up there.
Here's my question, and you can say, like, nothing, like, no answer is acceptable to this. The Yankees are in the middle of their 17 games, 17 days, I think, until next week. So we have 7 games ahead of us this week. Do you think, or in your mind, is there, like, what's the most likely pitching move, either for a guy to take a start or reliever to come up? Like, I just want to know, like, is there a move to be made this week to get one of these guys up? Or do you not think so?
It's a really interesting question.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened already with like pushing somebody and putting someone in for a spot start. But
yeah, so then the next off day is May 8th, which is, you know, they play 7 games, 4 on the road in Baltimore, then 3 in Detroit, and then the day off the following Monday before the Astros series. I think what would make the most sense, because we know that the Astros still have a lineup that's hitting well. Like, I think the other day they had a 118 WRC plus. I think as a team right now it is 117. Like, that's a good lineup still. So I think the thing that would be most reasonable would be to use a spot starter in the Tigers series, push Nestor Cortez to the Astros series and use that off day plus the spot starter to extend the rest for everyone. But I think that guy is Cody Poteet. Like, haven't they kind of telegraphed that already?
Yeah, I just, why can't it be like, why can't that be Clayton? If they're going to treat him like a starter, like, I want to see him or Will Warren coming up. Like, There's no reason. They're on the 40, man.
Yeah, no, I think it should be Beater.
I agree with you. I feel like it would be Poti, but like that's just kind of like the frustration is valid, I think, because that's what we think is going to happen.
Will Warren hasn't been quite as good as Beater this year either.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I think they could really benefit from using Beater in a spot like that. All right, Whipple. We're getting close to the end of the episode here. It was another winning week. The Yankees are about to play four games in Baltimore, and I will be in attendance at two of those games, Monday and Wednesday, which I'm looking forward to. I've been thinking about how confident I should feel in New York Yankees, so I wanted to get your 1 to 10 confidence rating in this team coming off a winning week against the A's and Brewers and, of course, scoring 30 runs in their last two games.
Yeah, I'm going to stay at a 9. I feel like maybe I'd been overshooting, but now it kind of seems like it lines up. And really, like, it comes from similar feeling of last week where, like, the week on a whole was good, really good at the end of it, but it wasn't spotless. And I think there was some moments of, like I felt last week, like, staring down the barrel of the gun and then avoiding that. Now, I feel like emphatically they've kind of answered more questions than they did at the end of last week, but I also feel like a 9 is a very fair rating to give a team that, like, you're pretty confident in. And for me, yeah, like, I think I'm a little bit concerned about, like, what happened Friday. Like, not what Aaron Boone did, but, like, just the way that unfolded kind of because of the shortness of the staff, how Michael Tonkin had to pitch the 10th. Like, to me, that I think it is not fair to criticize Aaron Boone, but it is fair to criticize, as we have been, what's going on in the roster right now. So, like,
sure.
The offense is on its way, and I still believe in the core guys. The pitching staff, you know, there's some questions to be answered. But by and large, I mean, if leading the American League East heading into a four-game set that, you know, while very important, like, let's all remember, like, these are two very good teams, and the Yankees have established themselves as one of those teams. This is not like the Yankees have to make up four games in the Orioles in a single week. Like, this is just going to be an April series with two very good teams. And I'm glad that the Yankees are able to be in that position, because last year they weren't. Like, they were not one of the three best teams in the American League East. So I appreciate that. I enjoy it. I think a 9 is the confidence rating of a 9 feels very fair to me. And as you know, like, on this trajectory, I will say that, like, it is easy to see it going back up. I just want to see, like, the dominance. Like, I want to see a 6-1, you know, I want to see, like, some sweeps.
That'd be exciting.
Like, maybe not this week, but, like, I want to see this team kind of do what they were doing at the beginning of the year and start to really, like, push that record lots of games above 500. And they've stalled out a little bit in the last few weeks. Still very good, but I think there's that level there, and I hope that this is the week where they start to get back to that. And, again, this is, like, high-class problems, because this team very good.
This team is very good. They're third in the league in Fangraphs WAR for position players. They have the second lowest ERA for the entire staff. Like, there's absolutely a lot to like. I think I was at 8 last week. I'm going to go up to 8.5 because they hit 10 home runs in one series. And I see 10 instances of the world famous home run in the same series. I'm going to be excited about it. And I am. You know, as you pointed out, we share some reservations about this team, particularly in how they're going to productively cover innings in the absence of Gerrit Cole and some of the guys who aren't back yet in the bullpen. And I think it's fair to be worried about those things. But as I've been saying all year, as the offense rounds into form, some of those high leverage innings turn into lower leverage innings. And I think that's what we saw this weekend. Like, if the Yankees weren't hitting the way they're hitting, who knows if, you know, they get into that 4-4 game and they only ever get to 5 or 6 runs. How do you handle the end of that game? I don't know. But the offense made that a non-factor, and that's what you have to want the offense to do. So I loved that out of them. So that's the reason that I am increasing my confidence. I saw a lot of stuff I like from the offense. This team has a top 5 offense, which I think they absolutely can. That is something to be very, very excited about. Whipple, I think that does it for this podcast. As we said, baseball can give you a lot of short hits of dopamine, but I'm telling you, that drip was going all weekend for me. Even from the Trent home run, like the vibes were just very good. And to score 30 runs over the Saturday and Sunday was phenomenal as well, of course. Before I wrap things up, and you know, get ready to go to two of these games in this series in Baltimore, do you have any parting shots?
Yeah, well, you know, it was Yankees Brewers this week, and with the Brewers, we have the Brewers player Gary Sanchez and Jake Bowers. But I just wanted to highlight a quote that I shared with you, and maybe this is, you know, I could turn it over to you after, but Gary seemed to me this weekend, from the videos we saw and the interviews he did, he seemed like very comfortable, at peace. I mean, the fact that he talked to the New York media on his own, I thought was awesome, because like, yeah, he was so vilified 3 years ago that like, it seems
by
like
a lot of those people,
a lot of those writers, for him to do that shows, I think, like, he's in a good place, you know, the feeling, no hard feelings. But like the quote that I think I caught was, you know, he said, there's a lot of people out there, Yankees fans, who still root for me. And, you know, that means a lot to me. And so I was like, has he seen the hot Gary Summer tweets? I ask you now, do you think Gary Sanchez has seen anyone, at least one of your tweets, and smiled to himself and said, they're still out there?
I don't know if.
And I will say that I read somewhere, like from a SEO person, that it was something like, if you think an athlete might have seen your tweets, they probably have, or something like that. So
yeah, I saw a similar thing. So I don't know if Gary has seen any of my many tweets about him, but I think I'm probably the loudest Yankee fan about Gary Sanchez. And if his comment that he appreciates the Yankee fans who are still rooting for him was genuine and like experience based, then it would stand to reason that he has. And I hope he has, because I want Gary to know the extent to which I still support him. To this day, one of the, I appreciate that.
Because I just feel like, sorry, I feel like it was so targeted. I just, part of me is like, I don't think he had to say that. And I think he said it.
He didn't have to say that.
I rest my case.
To this day, one of the pieces on YankeesFiles.com that I'm proudest of was the farewell to Gary Sanchez, which I wrote while extremely sad and angry about the IKF trade, because I know ball. And I hope he's seen it. And even if he hasn't, I'm glad that he is feeling support from Yankee fans to this day, because he held for a long time the mantle that Clay Holmes now holds, which is the most unjustly criticized Yankee. You know, even today, people forget how good he was before he got COVID in 2021. Like, he was a top five offensive catcher that year until he was struck by a global pandemic. Like, sorry, I don't know what you want. He's a good player. And while I'm very disappointed that he's no longer on the Yankees, I'm happy that he succeeded in San Diego. I'm happy that he is succeeding in Milwaukee. I'm happy that I saw him hit a home run, his first of the year, in Baltimore this year. And I hope, if he has not seen any of my many tweets about him, that he does at some point in the future, because I will be waving the hot Gary Summer flag for his entire career, which I hope is long and prosperous, as it really already has been. Like, Gary Sanchez, again, on the unjustly criticized point, is a far better player than he often gets credit for. And yeah, I'm very happy for him.
He legged out a double on Friday, essentially. I mean, didn't win them the game, but was a huge part of them tying the game. And even though I'm not on your level, even though I was like, I'm not going to root for him in the same way that I think you are, I was happy. I was glad to see it. Like, it's not my place to say my Gary feelings, but yeah, like I probably am 1/100th of what you are, but we both lived that moment. We both were there for those moments, and it is cool to see him succeeding. For me, like, it just struck me that, like, it seemed like an older, more, you know, kind of wiser, like, with more perspective. Mm-hmm. And if he has that piece and he's, you know, it seems like he does, I'm just happy for him as a person. So a cool moment from the weekend. And I'm glad that we don't have to face him anymore because, yeah, I think the National
League Central, a 500 foot home run was coming.
It was, yeah, one more game and we were going to have it.
And I think the elephant in the room here is he was removed for a pinch hitter in today's game after being hit by a pitch twice. So we hope that he's okay because that stuff can obviously be pretty bad. So hopefully that was just done out of an abundance of caution, and we'll be waving the hot Gary Sumner flag all summer. I think there was one thing that I was going to say while you were saying that, and I've since forgotten what it was, but couldn't have been that important then. It's time for us to wrap things up. You can keep up with everything we do at YankeesFiles.com. You can follow us on Twitter, where we are at Yankees Files. Our podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, with the added bonus of video on Spotify. And the entire video podcast also goes up on YouTube, where we are at Yankees Files. We will be back same time, same place next week to recap the week that was after four games in Baltimore and three games in New York against the Tigers. And until then, let's go first place Yankees.